This episode of Get Real Podcast was so much fun. I did it with one of my best friends of all time, Jen Wayne. We have been friends for over a decade. We have done so much stuff together, from writing songs. We were in a trio, Stealing Angels together. We did The Amazing Race twice together. Season 22, where we got fourth place. Season 24, we went back for All Stars and we got second place. We talk all about all of our journey together. We talk about stories from The Amazing Race. We talk about music. We talk about failing, succeeding, how you overcome, how you keep going. And now Jen is in the hit trio, Runaway June. It's an all-female trio, and they have a top 10 song. By the time you hear this podcast, though, it's probably going to be a top 5 song because it's killing the charts. It's called Buy My Own Drinks. And Jen is just all about perseverance, staying strong, not giving up. And it's so inspiring and so much fun to have this conversation. So get excited. Here's Jen Wayne. Hello, hello.
Hi.
I'm here with Jen Wayne. What's going on, Jen?
I'm just staring at your baby bump, just in awe.
I mean, it's big.
I mean, it's beautiful.
By the time this episode airs, I will probably have a child. Isn't that crazy?
Yes, that is crazy. And for all the listeners, Caroline and I have known each other forever. So to see you with a baby.
How many years have we known each other?
Like 14? Yeah. Or 15 maybe? A long time.
I mean, I've known you since the day you moved to Nashville. Pretty much. Because you moved into a house that you found on Craigslist.
Oh my God. And Beth, wait.
Beth Cooper Potter now.
You were driving. You were going to Forever 21.
Still my favorite store.
And you were like about to break up with your boyfriend. You didn't know how to break up with him. God. I'll never forget that.
Sounds about right. Hot mess. I mean, I think we met and I was like 23 and you were like 24 or 25.
Yeah, 24.
24. And now I'm...
Actually, I think I met ages? When I was 23 and you were 22.
Do you speak your age out loud?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Just a grand old 37.
I'm a grand old 36. So we have known each other for like 13 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember hearing through the grapevine, because I had moved here to Nashville from Texas, small town girl, to be a country music singer. And my friend from college, Beth, was like, got this house on Craigslist. She's like, yeah, John Wayne's granddaughter is moving from California. And
With
her chihuahua. And she's going to live with me. And I'm like, at that point, I was like, why aren't you going to live in a mansion? Like, you know, you're John Wayne's granddaughter. You should be living somewhere like, don't you have like a mansion and a limousine service and all sorts of stuff?
I wish. That would have been cool.
But instead, you moved into a house with like 6 girls and you lived in a closet, basically. One girl lived in a tent in the backyard.
No, I had a room. So what happened was, for everyone listening, I rented from this girl who said, it was going to be me and her and my one dog. And I get there and she had literally rented every crevice of the house out. She rented the sunroom out, the closet out, the attic out. There was a girl living in a tent in the backyard.
Like an extension cord to the house, so she had a fan in there or something?
Like a TV, I think, or something. It was just so crazy. And like all these dogs. And remember Rebecca and her dog too?
Oh my God. Oh, her dog was so scared of everything.
I know. So yeah, that was my first Nashville experience.
So I met you like literally right when you moved to town.
Yeah, I think it was the day. I remember you were driving in that car.
And we were both kind of shy. And so we sort of started like linking up, trying to do music together, like kind of almost instantly-ish.
Yeah, no, instantly. We started writing together.
But you had a deal. You had a record deal when you moved to town.
Oh my God.
Yeah, with Merv Griffin.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, if you don't know, Merv Griffin started like Wheel of Fortune, right?
Yes. Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune. He was like the first late night talk show guy. He was like before Johnny Carson.
And he's
your Merv Griffin show.
Godfather?
He was like a godfather. He wasn't my godfather, but he just like was like a grandpa to me, you know? He was so sweet. And he wrote the theme song for Jeopardy. And he had a number one song in the country. With like lovely bunch of coconuts.
He wrote that.
Yeah.
I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts. Diddly dee. No, he did not.
Yes. No, that was him singing too. What? Isn't that crazy? Yeah. He was like so talented.
What a creative brain to write that strange song.
I know.
I love that.
And the Jeopardy theme song.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was pretty awesome.
That's amazing. Okay. So you moved to town because you were in California. And then how did you decide to move to Nashville?
Well, I always wanted to be a songwriter.
Yes.
And... So I just knew that the best songwriters in the world were here. And I kind of like tried to do it a little bit in LA, and I would write with people, you know, here and there. But I just knew that if I wanted to be the best, I had to be around people that were the best. And I was definitely not even close to being the best. So I moved here. And if I would have known how hard it was then, I would have never moved. I mean, I was so naive.
Ignorance
I had no idea. Yeah. So I was just, and I should have quit probably so many times. No. I don't know why I kept going, but I just kept going.
No, you should not have
no,
quit.
No, seriously, you know.
Well, you know, I think that's one thing that happens in this musical entertainment journey is it doesn't happen right away.
No.
And you've really got to want it, because if you don't want it, you're not going to get it, because no. This town can swallow you alive, even though it's
so
wonderful.
It will weed you out.
Everyone's kind and loving, and it's an amazing community, but you've got to want it. You got to kick butt, and you got to stay with it.
Yeah. Well, it's so weird, because sorry, if you guys hear a hard breathing, that's
it's
my dog.
It's a giant chihuahua.
That's my chihuahua.
Blue, last time I saw him, he was this tiny little thing, and he is so big.
He's had a few dog bones in his life.
Love to eat. He's so cute.
But you know what's really weird is some people move to town and it happens like that. Like some people, it just happens so fast, and then some people, it takes forever. And I think you have to like not get caught up in worrying about the people that made it so fast, because I feel like I had a little bit of that for like 5 years. I'm like, all my friends are making it. All the people I've grown up with are all successful now, and I'm still at the very beginning, you know? And it's hard to like not compare yourself to that or not look at that and be like, shoot, you know, why aren't I there? You just kind of have to focus on yourself and just keep going. And
comparison is the thief of joy. No, is that what that quote is? Comparison is the thief of joy or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, I've never heard that.
But yeah. So tell me a little bit about your journey. So tell me how it all went. Break it down for me. Tell me. And also for everyone listening, Jen was a professional tennis player.
Was.
For all y'all.
Being the keyword.
Before she became a hit singer songwriter, she was a professional tennis player before. So you have many talents.
Well, thank you. Was is definitely the key word there.
You still got it, girl.
Well, so I moved to town with that deal, and we made a record with Carl Jackson. And
because you love bluegrass.
Bluegrass. Yeah, I loved it. And it was kind of a bluegrass record. But unfortunately, Merv passed away before it was done. So the deal kind of just faded. And So I was like, okay, I've got to figure something else out. And I remember I got this manager, and she was Madonna's manager, and she was awesome.
Carice.
But she, yes, Carice. But she lived in LA, and she didn't really know Nashville. And she's like, okay, let's just do a showcase. And I had played like 5 live shows in my life. I didn't know what I was doing. And so she set up this huge showcase at 12th and Porter. Every label in town was there. There were news crews there. Like people were waiting outside the door. And I was so green.
And you had a
green.
Lot of hype, too, because you're John Wayne's granddaughter, too.
Yeah.
And you're gorgeous. And
Thank
so
you.
Everyone was curious, like, what is this going to be like?
And it was very bad.
It
was very bad. And it was crazy, though, because you have to fall sometimes. Like, I fell so hard that night. Like, I thought I did well. And then I got passed by every single label. I was like, oh, my God. And I just remember, like, wanting to just move home and thought, like, I can never show my face in this town again. Like, everybody knows I failed. Everybody passed on me. Like, I can't stay here. And I don't know why I did stay here. I think I just was so stubborn. That
how do you deal with moments like that when you feel like you've really put yourself out there, you're super vulnerable and exposed, and like you said, you felt like you had failed? Obviously, it's not a failure, because it all led to where you are now. But at the time, it felt like...
And it was a failure at the time, which is okay.
It's okay.
Yeah.
How do you decide that you're going to show your face again? Like, what do you tell yourself in those moments?
I don't know. I just remember going home and just bawling, crying. My best friend Dre was with me, and we like went out and had sushi, and I think I drank all the sake in the world that night. But I think I like cried for probably a week of just like, how am I going to show my face again? And I don't really remember what the moment was, but I do remember my mom calling me and saying that my grandpa, who's John Wayne, and, you know, one of the most famous people in the world. And he didn't really become a star till he was in his 50s. He did over 270 movies, and he really didn't come into his, you know, huge stardom till later in life. She was like, so don't give up. Like, you're just doing it the hard way. And so I just stayed. And that's when, honestly, you and I started writing a lot, and you were kind of in a position where you were super talented, but you were kind of afraid to put yourself out there.
Totally afraid.
And so I think it was just easier to do it together. Yeah. You know, I think that's like, for me, always been super helpful to have friends and support.
Yes.
And like doing something together with someone, it's like you give each other the strength. So totally. I think that's what we did for each other.
And we locked in. And yeah. It was fun too.
It was awesome. And then Taylor, we had a little wild child.
And Taylor, who's Loretta Lynn's granddaughter, hopped on board.
Yeah.
Kept everything spicy.
And she taught, I feel like, both of us a lot because she just had no inhibition. She'd get out on stage and she was just
fearless.
Like fearless. And I was all fear. So I think she like really taught us how to be a performer. And that aspect of it.
To get out of our shell. Because like yeah. in interviews, she was so sometimes too real and too raw. But it taught us how to be honest and how to activate that part of ourselves instead of just being so nervous that everything had to be perfect.
Yeah.
Because I think we saw with her that people really responded to her outrageous realness.
Yeah. And it's putting like, herself out there.
It's putting herself out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like boot camp. I feel, and our band was called Stealing Angels. I feel like even though it didn't pan out, it was the greatest thing that could have happened for all three of us.
Yeah.
Just to prepare us for this entertainment journey.
Totally. And that's like looking back now. 37 It took a long time to get here, but like every single moment, every single failure, every single thing you did leads up to where you are now. Like you wouldn't have the tools to be where you are now if you hadn't have done that, you know?
And you really believe that.
Oh, 100% with Stealing Angels. I mean, I learned so much from you girls being on stage and then radio. I like met so many radio people, which got you and I our next job being on the other side of the music business.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, so Caroline and I, we just don't give up.
We don't.
There was a label and they hired us to be a promotion team together, a duo.
Which the promotion is the one that goes around promoting artists to radio people across the country.
And he hired us.
So switch sides.
Yeah, switch sides. We got on the other side, which is so important to learn the other side of the music business.
That was priceless.
Yeah. And they hired us because Caroline and I knew radio from being in a band. They were like, this is interesting. No one's ever really done this before. They've never hired an artist to be on this side. And we did really well
together. And disclaimer for everyone listening, there's only always one regional per region. But Jen and I were like, we're not doing it if you don't hire us together. We're like, we're not going to go on the road and talk to all these radio PDs who we love. But like, we've been used to being together in a trio or like us just working together. We're like, we're not doing this solo.
Yeah.
It's too lonely out there on the road. It's too hard.
It's too hard. And also we knew we were good. So we're like, we knew he wanted to hire us. And we're like, this is the deal. You're hiring us both or not.
Man, that was fun. We got a company card.
That company card. That was the real deal.
I've never had a company card before. I was like, oh, we're highfalutin.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
I know. And Jen, you're like the responsible one. So Jen was always one like super organized and like plan everything out. And I felt like I was always like the little sister. But we had such a good dynamic.
I know, we did, because you brought me out of my shell. Like, you made me kind of more exciting, where I'd be the boring one.
You were
like,
not boring.
But we totally passed a whole nother world that you and I did.
Big world.
Which was Amazing Race.
That was a defining moment.
Yeah.
I mean, all this is a defining moment, but that was like, that was crazy, because it took us to a whole nother stratosphere.
Yeah. And also, when our band broke up.
So Stealing Angels broke up because Taylor got knocked up.
And she wanted to be a mommy, and
yeah,
I was kind of like came to a screeching halt. And Caroline and I were like, what are we gonna do with our lives?
Like, Taylor got pregnant, moved to Seattle. She's still married to her husband, John,
and has the two cutest boys.
And now
in the world.
She's like doing a tribute band to Loretta, and she and Conway Twitty's grandson's doing it with her. And she's like on cloud nine, loves her life, found her niche. Like, it's awesome. She found her spot,
yeah.
But yeah, it came to a screeching halt, and you and I were like, what are we going to do with our lives?
Yeah, we felt like the same way. I think my showcase felt like, we're like, it all just came crashing down. Like, we failed.
Like from one day to the next, we lost our deal. I lost my publishing deal. I don't know if you lost yours. No, you still had yours, but like lost everything.
Yeah, it was crazy. And Amazing Race just happened like out of the blue. I think like a month later or some crazy. I don't know. It's just so weird. But they were looking for two country singers.
If that's not a god
thing. Caroline and I didn't know what we were going to do. And that came to us, just fell into our laps like, out of the blue. Please. Yes.
They're like, do you want to do this? We're like, uh-huh.
Yes. Little did we know what we were getting into. They were like, oh, it's a traveling show, because I had never seen it. Travel around the world and do fun things. I'm like, yeah, great. No idea how difficult it
was. Tell me your take on Amazing Race. What was your experience like? And what did you think about that?
I mean, it was unbelievable. It was amazing, for lack of a better word. But just being able to travel the world and see it the way we did, like there's so many things that we would have never done on our own. Like I would never go to Sri Lanka or ever, you know, Malaysia or wherever. And so it just felt like we got an experience that we would have never gotten without that show. But
Sri Lanka, where you made an outfit in the sweatshop?
That was Malaysia.
Malaysia.
Or China.
Oh yeah, maybe. I don't remember. Like how crazy is that? Like we went to a sweatshop.
I know.
And you made an outfit.
Yeah, and you got to see like what that really looks like what a sweatshop in Asia, mm-hmm, in a third world country looks like, and it's crazy.
That was what was so cool about Amazing Race, is it puts you in the environment. Like, mm-hmm, you're not just like a tourist, you are like in real life environments that are happening in that culture.
Yeah. And, you know, also for you guys listening, you don't have any money. Like, you just have the money that they give you per leg. And so to like be at an airport and not be able to just buy a bottle of water, just simple things that you would normally not even think about. It's not even about being rich. It's just being able to buy a bottle of water.
Yeah.
To not be able to do that is like, it just really kind of put things in perspective of how lucky we are. That was a lot of my take on it.
What were some of your favorite places that we went to, and some of your favorite experiences and favorite teams?
Well, okay. Favorite teams. We love the Cowboys.
Oh, they were so great. Love
the Globetrotters. I know. Dave and Connor were the best.
And they were the father-son duo who beat us at the end.
That's why we got 4 seconds.
We got second place. We should have beat them. But it's fine. If we were going to lose to anyone, it was fun. And they were both cancer survivors, which was awesome.
They're awesome. They're amazing. I think those are my favorite teams. Mm-hmm. My favorite experiences. Switzerland, I think, was just so beautiful. Like, yeah, that cheese thing was just not my favorite experience.
So what that one was, I always call myself the man of our relationship.
She was the brawn.
Jen was my damsel. And we had these, like, 50-pound wheels of cheese that we had to haul up a mountain.
Of snow.
It's here, Jen and I, two girls, not huge girls at all.
No.
And there's these big guys they're doing the exact same challenge as us. It's the same weight of cheese. I mean, it's like, you get no advantages.
No.
It's all the same for everybody.
The physical part, it's tougher for women, I feel like.
So we had to haul these bales of cheese up to this snow-filled mountain, load them up on a sled, and then get them to go down the mountain. And they're like falling. The bales are falling
and
off.
And when the cheese falls off, it sinks into the snow. Like, it's not like it just falls off on grass. Like, you have to like dig down in the snow to get it out.
And it's like,
Caroline's like, come on, Jen, you can do it. I'm like, I want to go home.
That was why.
I want to eat the cheese.
Yes. Oh my gosh. But we hung in there. No one thought we were going to hang in there. And I think that was our greatest advantage.
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Oh, 100%. And no one thought we could do it.
Everyone was like, oh, let's keep Jen and Caroline around because we can beat them at the end. So let's keep them in the game. It kind of worked to our advantage.
Totally. And we worked it.
And then, I don't know which, because we did two seasons. Season 24 and then All-Stars. Season 22 and then All-Stars 24. So I might be mixing up the seasons. But one time, the Cowboys had an express pass. And how did you sweet talk them into that?
That was my theory. I'm like, listen, so an express pass.
But tell them the challenge, because I was losing my mind.
Oh my gosh. Caroline was having to put together a car, a big, big, like, toy car. And it was, the directions were in Chinese. And she doesn't like putting stuff together to begin with.
Before, Jen was like, no, you love this.
I thought you did. And I realized that was my mom.
Like, I hate assembling. What are you talking about? I'm the world's worst.
No, oh my God. And I'm terrible too. So, oh my poor Caroline. It was, I'm, that was that challenge was a nightmare. And so Caroline's just breaking down. She's like crying, oh, yeah. And I'm just watching her, and everyone's breezing through it. And I'm like, we're going to lose. Like, we're going to get eliminated. She's having a breakdown. And I'm like, I have to get the express pass or we lose.
And the express pass means you get to bypass that challenge. And yeah. The Cowboys had one for themselves, and then they had to give one to another team.
Yeah, and they could give it to whoever they want at any time. And so I just went there, and I just started working it. On. But my reasoning was, I'm like, listen, we are not a threat. You know we're going to use it right here, so it will never be a threat to you in the future.
Because they're already done.
They were already going to win the leg. And I'm like, we're going to waste it right now, and we're the worst team. So we're not a competition for anybody. So you might as well give it to us rather than one of the good teams that could beat you guys.
When it's close.
Yeah.
That's actually not a lie.
No, I know. That was very honest.
You got
and it worked.
And you got it.
I'll never forget your face when I gave it to you. You were just so thankful. You didn't have to put that thing together.
Oh my God. Because I was like, this is where it's over. This is where we die.
I know. Mm-hmm. I knew it too. I saw it.
You knew it. Oh, but Jen, that's one thing. When you get in the zone, you can get in the zone. Like, when you know you got to get something done and drop the hammer,
I'll drop it.
You'll drop it.
Yeah.
And
we were a good team.
Because I'm not really as good at dropping the hammer. Like, I'm kind of a little more assertive, it feels like, in life sometimes on a regular basis.
Yeah. But you're assertive in the beginning.
Yes. But then I lose it at the end.
I'm like the slow snail, but like, I just won't stop.
And then when you really got to lay it down, you get a look in your eyes. I mean, you get focused. It is happening.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny.
And we got it. And we kept going.
What was one of your favorite?
You know, I loved getting to see the different cultures. Like you're saying, it was so cool to go to Sri Lanka and like riding those little tuk-tuks, which are like little crazy cars that are going everywhere, and I don't know how people don't get their heads chopped off. Because people are sticking their heads out, and cars are running right next to them.
And there's no lanes or no pattern. Yeah. Like, it's just all wild.
It's wild.
I don't know how they don't wreck every day.
I know. But to see that culture was amazing. I loved going to Africa.
I loved going to Africa, too.
And we got to stay in a cool place,
too. And that night when we got to, the Bushmen asked us to do their little ritual
like dance with the dance
by the fire with their babies and stuff. It was unbelievable. That was so cool.
I remember thinking to myself after Amazing Race, like, it changed me in the way that just seeing so much of the world and getting to have so many intimate experiences with cultures and the people in those cultures, it opened my eyes so much to realizing that there are so many ways to live life and so many ways to be happy. And like, you get,
and that ours isn't the only way or the right way, you know?
Like, you get stuck in your life here sometimes, which we have, it's amazing lives, and it's awesome to live in America. It's the greatest country, I think, and I know you feel the same way.
Yes, 100%.
But it's like, it was just so, it opened me up so much. I'm like, there's so many ways to go through this life.
I know. All the colors.
Yeah.
Like, even the dance that we learned in, was it Sri Lanka?
Where,
like,
was that one?
I think that was Sri Lanka, right?
Or was that Spain?
No, that's another dance, but the dance where we had to like twirl, or I was having to twirl the things.
Like plates on your head?
Yeah. One person had to roll two plates on the head and dance, and the other one had to do one. And so I took that for the team. But like, God, all the colors, there's so many beautiful colors in the world, you know, like all the just outfits and the different cultures is amazing.
We were really good teammates, I have to say.
We were. We never, like, obviously we got so frustrated with each other because it's impossible not to, but we never, like, went below the belt. We never really fought. We just got frustrated.
We just get intense sometimes.
Yeah. But, like, other teams would break down and they would fight and yell, and we just, like, and we held it together the whole time.
Tell that one story when we're running, like, it's towards the pit stop. I think it's, like, in Berlin or it's in Ireland. And we're both running, and I'm telling, or in those cobblestone streets, and I'm telling you to go one direction, and you're telling me to go the other. And I'm like, no, Jen,
Scotland,
you're wrong.
Edinburgh.
And I'm like, Jen, you're wrong. This is the wrong way.
Wait, what did I say?
And you go, we're both wrong.
Yeah.
We're both wrong and we're both going the wrong way. So drop it.
We started laughing.
Because you were convinced you were right. I was convinced I was right. And I was trying, and I get stubborn too. And I was like trying to like beat it in your head that I was right. And you're like, we're both wrong.
But that got you. You finally were like, yep, we are. We're both wrong. Yeah. But I will say, remember when we were in, oh gosh, I don't know where it was. I think it was England, actually. And we were driving and the car kind of broke down.
Because I had the parking brake on.
Yeah.
Driving on the highway.
And she's driving a stick shift on the left side of the road.
I had just learned how to drive a month before we go on the show.
And the stick is on your left hand. So it's not even just the other side. The whole thing is different. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, if you ever want to know if you should marry a person, just go drive a stick shift in traffic in London, lost, and see if you guys can still get along out there.
Did you,
if you
can
pass
that
test, I think you could like pass anything.
Did I pass your marriage test?
Yes. Barely.
I mean, I kind of broke down.
No, but like to me doing the directions, you driving, we were both like, it was impossible. And to like be able to still communicate and like not totally lose it on each other, that in that stressful of a situation is like, I've thought, okay, that's got to be the test. That's the marriage test.
We did really good. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, because you and I decided ahead of time that we were always going to assume the best in each other, mm-hmm. because I knew you wanted to win just as much as I did, but we have like our physical limitations that are going to pop up and circumstances. And we always just assumed, even like if we were really mad inside and wanted to like lose it, we never did, because we're like, okay, I know that person, I know she's doing the best she can, and then next time it's gonna be me who's gonna need the grace.
And I feel like we both did really well with like keeping each other lifted, like when we were stressed out or having a bad, like when I was the very first episode when I was stuck in the sand for 800 hours. You were just so nice. You were just like, it's okay, Jen, you can do it, like you're just so positive. And I
felt bad for you because you couldn't find the ticket.
I know. It was so hot. And it was just a luck thing. And then by the time they started rebuilding the sandcastles, they were building it on different, putting it back on a different place. So it was impossible.
Basically, it was in Bora Bora. And the first challenge was there was all of these sandcastles. And Jen,
like 500.
500. And there was a few clues under them.
Yeah.
So you had to dig each one up. And if you didn't find a clue, you had to rebuild it. And so you were...
And it was hot. The sand was not... You had to pack the sand, and it was hot and dry. So I had to go to the ocean and get, like, water to pack the sand. I mean, each sandcastle took 5 minutes, right?
And like, you did at least that for hours. Finally, we got down to three teams at the end. It was us, Max and Katie, and then...
Firefighters.
And we did something that had never really happened in Amazing Race history. We called... We all decided that we were going to... What was it? Take a penalty?
Yeah.
And so...
Because all of us knew it wasn't going to be impossible to find the ticket. The sandcastles were put on different places, so we couldn't... It was impossible.
And everyone had been out there for hours. And so, okay, then explain what happened next.
So we agreed to take a penalty. And from that point on, it was just like a race to the finish line. And whoever loses is out, is eliminated. It was the first episode of our entire, like, the first show.
We're like, oh, great, we're getting out first.
We're going to be... And if you don't make it, that's the only time you're ever aired on TV. And so we were like, I cannot believe this is happening.
And then you don't had to go to any of the other countries. You miss the whole experience.
Yeah, you miss everything.
Yeah.
And so we... From that sandcastle on, we had to sprint to make a
canoe
by ourselves, two girls. Everyone else had guys on their team, and like tie it together and get the bamboo and make the canoe yourself, and then canoe 1.5 miles to the finish line. And we were against men, firefighters.
And in the ocean.
And like I had never canoed before.
Yeah.
And I was so tired because I'd been in the sand for like 11 hours. I had nothing left. And so the fact that we canoed the firefighters,
I have no idea, because they fell. They tipped. Thank God they tipped.
Yeah. And we balanced and stayed up. And you carried us until the end because I had nothing left.
Well, I found something in me that I never have had since Amazing Race and might not ever have again, which is a sense of a reserve energy that I didn't know I had. And I hadn't been building for 11 hours. But like when it came to Amazing Race and it came to like getting stuff done,
you were just on
I was not going to let a physical tiredness stop me. And that is not how I am in real life, because I will stop in real life, you know. But I was like, okay, we got to go. We got to get there. Like, we got to stay. I think I haven't wanted something that badly.
Yeah. Well, and it's a competition. You feel like you're kind of in the Hunger Games out there. Like,
Who wants to get sent home?
Yeah. No, never.
That was the most torturous fate that could have happened.
But you
stayed with it too, Jen.
I did too, but you really powered us through that. And we somehow out canoed the firefighters in a mile and a half long canoe ride after building sandcastles in 100 degree heat for 8 hours.
And we lived to see another day, and we made it all the way to the final season finale.
Yeah.
We got to go to every country. But how good does food taste after you work so hard like that in a physical challenge?
And sleep. Like, I never had a problem falling asleep.
Oh, no.
I could just close my eyes and I'd fall asleep. And today it takes me like an hour to fall asleep. Uh-huh. Yeah, that was, being that exhausted helped.
No, I'm so grateful for that experience.
Me too.
You know, what a blessing. And it came around at the perfect time of our life.
It did.
Because we both kind of thought everything was over.
And it gave us kind of like a new sense of ourselves. Like, we can do anything. We can literally do anything we put our mind to.
Yeah, what did you take away from it all? Like, what was your gathering from all of it?
I mean, I just thought two girls that should have been eliminated on the first episode of the first time they did it, and they ended up going all the way both times, losing the second time by 4 seconds. All these other teams that are so much stronger than us, we beat. And it was just awesome. It was like mental. We like mentally persevered and we did it. And it was awesome.
What did you learn about mentally? Like, what did you take away from that? Because there were teams that were stronger than us. There were teams that were better than us. So, but if being a mental game, what did you realize with all that?
That's everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. You can make or break yourself with your mind.
Yeah.
You know, you can keep yourself going. Your mind's the thing that's telling your body to keep going. It's not your physical thing first. You know, you just got to keep at it. And I feel like that just showed you so much, like mind over matter. And we did it.
You're really good at not getting flustered. Like, even if you get flustered for a second, you're really good at pulling it back together. Do you think that's from being an athlete, or what do you think that's from? Or is it just your personality?
I think all my parents' divorces.
How many divorces have you lived through?
Like 8 or something crazy. Yeah. No, I do think like I always have had to be the one to keep it together. And just like even in every situation I find myself in, I'm always kind of like.
Because you don't really let yourself fall apart.
No.
But now and then you'll have a moment, but it is rare.
Yeah. I think I'm mentally pretty tough, but I do drink wine, so that helps.
So do you think it started as a kid?
Yeah. I think just like being tossed around in families like that. And I was the oldest, so I had to take care of my brother and sister. And I think, you know, and my brother kind of had struggled with it. So if I didn't keep it together, who would he have? So I just kind of had to. And I think that's how it just was my whole life. And then like moving to Nashville, I had nobody, no family here. And so I just had to kind of be my own strength.
But what has your mind wanted to do? Because like, what has made your mind be strong? What is the goal that your mind says be strong for?
I guess I've never thought about that. That's a really good question. Probably for myself, like believing in myself. And I think,
because you've had things that you have known that you've wanted to become and achieve things your whole life.
Yeah.
You've always had high expectations for yourself.
Yeah. And I always know I can do it, but there's also that kind of thing in the back of your head that's like, no, you can't do it. Or like, no, you're not good enough. And so that's a battle of like battling that, going, no, actually I can do it. Like, and I can work hard and I can do it and I can do anything I put my mind to. And so I think that that's something for myself. I just know, work hard, be nice to people, and you just persevere. Don't give up, you know?
When did you
you could be not the most talented person, which is me. But seriously, you could be the most talented person in the world and never make it because you're not mentally strong, and you give up maybe one day before you get the record deal the next day, you know? I just feel like people give up too soon.
When did you realize that being mentally strong and working hard was the answer?
Well, all my life. And tennis too, that like really
helped.
Your
dad's a professional tennis coach. Who did he?
Yeah.
He's like
Jimmy Connors, and he's amazing.
He was Jimmy Connors' coach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tennis, because even if I was losing and even if the girl was a better player, I knew that if I stuck in there, I mentally beat so many people. And like, I'm not even kidding. That's how I won a lot of my matches.
What would you do in your head? What goes on in there?
Like, I wouldn't give up, and like, I would change my game. A lot of people don't like slices. This is all tennis talk. But I just figured out what would make the other person fall apart, and I wouldn't give up. And so there, I really feel like I mentally won a lot of my matches because I just wouldn't give up. So that's kind of what...
So when you feel yourself spiraling or hearing that voice in your head saying you're not good enough, you can't do this, what do you do to flip it? Because you obviously flip it. How do you flip it?
I think having faith in God for me is like the main thing.
But how do you know that you're good enough to flip it? Like for people who don't have-
like you don't. I mean, you know you're good enough inside. Your gut's telling you you're good enough. Everybody's good enough. We all have that.
So you know that deep down that you're good enough.
Yeah.
You believe that.
Yes. You trust your gut. But I do think that there's so many, you know, people that are telling you you're not, or you're failing, or you haven't made it yet, or whatever. And for me, like having faith in God, just going, okay, I wouldn't be on this path if God didn't want me here, you know, and if there were all these blocks, like I feel like I would feel like I'm going down the wrong path if I was, and I never did. I just felt like it wasn't happening yet.
But feel like you'd be hitting roadblock after roadblock after roadblock, resistance.
Yeah.
Just not feeling like it's right.
Yeah, and I failed, but then one more door would open, or this thing led to this. And so I just like kept hanging in there, whether it was like...
Following it.
Yeah, working at a label, working at a publishing company, whatever it was, just like staying in music, there was just always a door that was open. So I felt like if God wanted me to not be doing this, he would have closed all the doors and I would have known. So it's just like trusting him, going, okay, you want me here. So I'm going to do it for myself and for you, you know? And if you don't want me here, I will know it.
And do you believe that he would have opened another door somewhere else?
100%.
So
yeah.
You believe in your heart that he will guide you.
Yes.
With the doors he opens and closes.
If you trust him.
And sometimes those doors closing it's like a painful...
Horrible,
it's
yeah.
a painful road.
Yes.
And it's not like he makes it all shiny and pretty.
No, and sometimes, a lot of times I fight it, you know? Like, I'm like, no, I don't want to do this, you know? But I just feel like you have a gut feeling and that's always right. And sometimes we have that gut feeling and we know it, but then our mind talks you into something else. And so you just have to have faith that that's the right decision, you know, and the right path.
So what has always been your goal, ultimate goal? Like, because all these career journeys that you've been on that have been so amazing, like, and have ultimately, like, it's been, they've all led to where you are now. But what was your goal always from the beginning?
I've always wanted to be a songwriter.
That was it. Not even singer.
Like, I mean, I wanted to be a singer, but if I, like, my heart was songwriting and I wanted to make music that people would hear and be affected by, because music's helped me so much in my life. Going through whatever you go through, there's always music. And so I just thought, God, if I could do that, you know, if I could make music that touches people, that would just be everything I want.
How did it feel when you were nominated for Song of the Year with She Don't Love You, She's Just Lonely with Eric Paisley?
It's crazy.
Was that like all your dreams coming true?
Yeah, it really was.
And that song was so personal for you.
Yeah, and I think too, the same thing, like with your mind, you struggle with like, oh my God, I don't deserve this, or like, why am I here? But then you're like, wait, no, I do deserve this. It's the same thing where you kind of second guess yourself. And I think that's kind of probably a struggle for a lot of people, is like, even when stuff comes to you, you're kind of like, ugh, do I deserve this? Am I really that good? I can't be. That was just luck. Or, you know, you just kind of always second guess yourself. So you kind of have to sometimes just enjoy the moment and say, you know what? I do deserve myself. I mean, I do deserve this. And it's so funny. I heard an interview that Shania did, and they were interviewing her in this big, beautiful house that she got. And the interviewer was like, do you ever just like look around and think, oh my gosh, how did I get this, you know, house? How did this all happen to me? And she goes, no. I know exactly how I got this house. Like, I know exactly all the work that it took to get me this house, you know? And I love that, because it's probably not the answer that you want, but it's like, no, I worked for this. You know, this didn't just fall into place. Like, I worked so hard for this. I love that. I thought that was so cool.
I struggle with that too, Jen. Like, I struggle with just feeling like I think you're way more confident than I am, because you got that iron trap mind. But I struggle with not feeling like I'm worthy of things. Yeah. And I don't know what that is, because I just feel like I always second guess myself that I'm not good enough. Someone's better. And there's always someone, like, some people are just so confident and they're just like, this is me. I've always meant to be here. This is my role and I don't care. I'll do whatever it takes. But me, I'm always like, oh my gosh, did they know I'm here? Is this a mistake?
Yeah.
They're going to find me out and I'm going to get kicked out.
Oh my gosh. I seriously feel the same way. I honestly think because you have empathy, you're an empath, me too. And like, we care so much, you know, and we're worried about other people and we're like, do I deserve this? But there's people out there that don't have it. And like, why am I getting it? You know? And I think that that's a lot part of it too, is that you really feel like you're not just taking it going, yeah, I deserve to be here. Like, you're like, no, my gosh, you're working for it. And you feel for other people, you know?
I wish I wasn't like that sometimes. Do you?
Me too. I wish I hated animals.
Jen and her mom. Golly. This is a funny story. One time, Jen and her mom were in a grocery store and they spent like 2 hours chasing a bird out of the store because they didn't want it to be trapped in there.
I probably shouldn't be telling this story because it's documented. But the other night, it's like animals find me because
they know you'll save them.
Yeah. So I'm driving down my street to get home and I went to meet Jackie out for drinks. And I had two drinks and I normally never drink and drive. I only Uber. Like, I will Uber everywhere, but this was so close. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to drive home. I've had two drinks and I'm driving home and there's a baby raccoon in the middle of the street and it's not moving. And I'm like, oh my God, here. And this has happened to me with possums. I mean, I'm the one that stops and saves them. Yes. And so I'm stopped on the side of the road and these cars are like rushing by and I'm like stopping traffic to save this baby raccoon. And I'm like, oh, if a cop comes, like, I'm going to get a DUI. I could either go home right now and leave the raccoon and not get a DUI, or I could stay here with the raccoon and like risk getting a DUI, even though I really don't think I had enough to get a DUI. But I remember having that thought where I'm like, screw it. I'm going to get a DUI.
So what'd you do?
Oh God. I called every animal thing. No one was answering.
And it wasn't moving even when you walked up to it?
No. And then I did something dumb and pet it because I was like, maybe it will let me like take it. And so I pet it and it hissed, but it didn't bite.
So it had gotten hit by a car.
I think so. And so I read on all these like websites that you go back and you get a box and you cover it with a blanket and pick it up. And then I could take it to an animal place the next morning. But by the time I went back, I went and got my box from a wine that I bought. Had a big old box of Camus.
Perfect.
The raccoon was going to go in a Camus
fancy
box.
Love it.
And by the time I got back, it had, I don't know, walked died? Away. I don't know. It wasn't there anymore.
Well, that's good.
I know. Hopefully it's okay.
Maybe you woke him up.
Yeah, maybe I woke him up. But that happens to me all the time. It happened to me with the possum too on that same street. And I waited there in the rain. It was when we were having an ice storm and it was just happening. And I was just getting poured on. And I just sat with the possum until the animal control came and got him. So that's how crazy I am.
I think that's really sweet though. You'll like chase stray dogs around the neighborhood.
And oh yeah.
You're still waking up looking at the sights to see which strays are missing and like chasing them down?
No, luckily because I'm not home enough to do that anymore. Yeah. But my mom has taken one of them.
Your mom's the same way.
Oh, she's the same way. But Bo now is like, I rescued a pit bull and somehow we got him to California on a plane when they wouldn't allow pit bulls on planes.
Because Jen and her talking.
And he was covered in mange. I mean, oh my gosh. And so we got him to Malibu and now he's living the life on the beach.
So he's living it.
Yeah.
God. Okay. So tell me how you've gotten to where you are now. So after you started off tennis, you started off moving, doing solo things. We got together. We formed a band, did Amazing Race. Then you also, after Amazing Race, you were pursuing another band for a little while too.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was called Darlington Abbey with Josh. He's an incredible dobro player. But I just kind of, I guess, just kept writing was like the main thing. And then that Eric Pasley song really kept me going because my publishers signed me again because of that. And so, and then Benny Brown, who was head of Broken Bow at the time, he saw Naomi sing and he had heard about my songwriting and you, and that's kind of how it all happened. Really songwriting, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's kind of what.
Steady.
Yeah. And then joined that band, which is Runaway June. And that was 5 years
ago.
I think 5 years ago.
That's crazy.
But even that, I mean, it's been a long road for us. I mean, this is our third single and girls that came, Marin came after us. I mean, so many girls came after us that just skyrocketed. And we just have been like waiting for waiting for the moment that we're going to make it. And finally this year we just had our first top 10 single.
But you did break history with your first single. Because y'all were like...
which we wrote together.
I was so lucky and grateful to be a part of that.
And so Caroline and I wrote Lipstick, our first single together. And also our title track of our album, Blue Roses.
So pretty.
It's beautiful. It's my favorite song in the album.
So pretty. But so y'all were breaking history though. Even though you didn't have like a number one or top 10 or whatever, you a female trio hadn't had a top 25 in since like the Dixie 10 years, Chicks.
Yeah. It was crazy.
So that was like, okay, you're already getting some cred.
Yeah, but then, and we were getting awesome. Like we got nominated for ACM New Vocal Group of the Year 2 times. We were getting, you know.
Recognition.
Yeah, recognition. And, you know, I think for us just being out there grinding it out on the road and figuring out like what we like to play live, what people like to hear live. It just took a lot of growth on the road for us to get to where we are now. And I feel like now you could just put us in any situation and we're like, we've been there, done that. We could play anything. We could have any sound problem, any whatever problem could happen.
Isn't that nice to be at that point?
Yeah. And it feels good because you're like, you know what? I worked for this. You know, I feel confident and comfortable because I've been in this situation 1,000 times before.
And you three now know how to work together in all situations.
Yeah. And also, like, having people like Carrie who...
Underwood. Let's just not forget that. Y'all been on tour with Carrie Underwood all year.
It's been amazing. But having people like her...
She's been such kind a big supporter of you guys.
Kind of give you credit, like her stamp of approval, that just means everything. And I feel like that all the people, John Party that did it, all the people that have helped us in our career, it's just kind of like little things that have gotten us to this point. And it's just... it's a crazy feeling. Feel very grateful for the community and like the people that have reached out and helped. And I feel like we could do that too, you know, like mm-hmm. every female too, especially that kind of breaks through. I feel like we're breaking down doors for people up and coming new artists behind us, you know.
Is it hard being a female in country music? Do you feel that?
I don't think it's hard because we're kind of in our own world and we just go play, you know, we do what we do. But I think when you look at the charts, you definitely see like there's a definite lack of females on there. I think there's 3 females right now in the top 30. It's us, Carrie, and Miranda. And it's just like, that's not enough.
No.
You know, so I don't necessarily feel like it's hard. I just feel like there's an obvious lack of female airplay, and also not just radio but on fairs and festivals, you know, and tours, and mm-hmm. I just feel like we all have been talking about it so long, but like we need to just start doing stuff.
I
like
agree.
Carrie, she just did it. She's like, I'm taking 2 female acts out on tour, you know. And yes. I feel like that's the next step.
Just
I feel
like
for this year
changes.
And next year, just everybody like start
so it's, the conversation has been had
and it's tired
and established.
Yes.
And it's tired.
Yes.
So now let's just do
yeah
it. Speaking of top 30, though, how does it feel to have that top 10 single?
It feels amazing.
I mean.
I will say.
When y'all came out and Buy My Own Drinks, I was like, if this song does not go all the way, then I'm shocked.
I have your voicemail saved because I have deleted all my voicemails, but I specifically saved that one because it was one of the coolest voice messages I've ever gotten. And she called and she was like, Jen, this is the one. This is it.
It's the one.
And I have it. I'm
you
like,
do?
Yeah, I'm going to keep it forever.
Oh,
and you were right.
Well, it just felt so good. It was so positive, and it's women empowerment, but it's not male bashing.
No, it's love our men.
You love your men, but you also freaking love yourself.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're just as capable to have a great time and do your own thing as you are with or without a man.
And friends, like the beginning line, it was like, I called my friends, they can't go out. Like, it's like, you don't need your friends, you don't need a man, you don't need anyone to make yourself happy. You can make your own self happy. And it's saying just for the night. It's like, you know what, I'm still not over this guy. I'm just gonna be by myself tonight. I'm not gonna just jump into something else, you know? It's just like, I think you said it best. You said it's self-love.
It is self-love.
Like a song about self-love.
My favorite line is, I can be my own boyfriend. I was like, I can be my own boyfriend. I was like, yes, you can be your own boyfriend.
Yes.
And you should be your own boyfriend.
We seriously just die every time we sing that line. We just know what's going to happen in the crowd. And it's so funny.
Do the women just scream?
Oh, and the guys love it too. They're like, heck yeah. They're like,
heck Yes.
Everybody loves it.
It's so good. Oh, yeah. It's so good. I'm so happy for you. Oh, and just like your whole journey to get here and to have stuck with it and to never give up, to stay mentally strong. It's just a testament to don't give up.
It is. If I can do it.
Because you've been here since you were 23. Mm-hmm. 23 years old. So how many record deals have you had?
Three
record deals mixed with a million jobs.
Yeah.
In the entertainment industry.
Song plucker, a radio rep. I mean, we've done it all. You too.
But it's just like, you could have easily quit any of those times and just been like, this is too hard. I'm not going to do this.
I wanted to a lot.
But what kept you going? Because you knew that you would get here? Did you know you'd get here?
I did and I didn't. Like, I feel like you know, you have to know. Like I said, it's in your gut. You have to know that you can do it. But your mind will be like, oh, but you really can't. But you're like, no, I can.
But you had to know a lot. At least you had to know pretty strongly, because this is a hard thing to keep going for if you don't strongly feel it.
I think I'm just stubborn.
You got that John Wayne gene.
I think I'm like very stubborn. But I really truly believe too that, like I was telling you about my faith in God, if my journey was going to change, even if I wasn't going to make it how I wanted to make it, it was going to lead me to what I was supposed to be doing. And that's really what I believed, even still to this day. It's like, whatever I'm doing now is for a reason. I'm here for a reason.
Yeah.
And I'm on the right path.
So you trust it.
Yeah. I feel like you have to, or else it's impossible.
Do you kind of like being in an industry that forces you to trust that much in God?
Yeah. I mean, for me, that's everything. And I feel like, especially country music, we're like a family. And that's what's so special about it. And we talk about God, you know, or in this day, sometimes it's not the coolest thing to talk about. But yeah, faith is so important. And I feel like this whole community kind of embraces that. And I think it's wonderful.
What's one of the moments that you think about back on your life that just makes you smile from ear to ear and brings you so much joy when you think back on it?
My dogs. Every time I've rescued a dog. That's really honestly the truth. Songwriting is what I love, but I really want to make a change for animals. And I would love to start a sanctuary for old dogs that get kind of thrown out when they're older. And I just want them to have like a good life at the end, you know, and be loved at the end. Because I think that's, everyone adopts new dogs and new puppies, but all the old ones kind of get left behind. So that's what I want to do.
I love that.
So I got to make some money to do that.
So that's like your goal.
That's my goal.
That's your charity. That yeah. And it's always been dogs.
Yeah. And I love kids, obviously. I mean, kids and dogs are everything. But I feel like God definitely put
dogs
in my heart for a reason, because probably so many people have kids on their heart. You know, I think he definitely put that on my heart for a reason.
What does success mean to you? After everything that you've seen growing up with John Wayne as your grandfather, like, you have seen success and you have been on your own journey of major highs, major lows. What is success for you at this point?
Not giving up. Seriously, like, to me, when I look back, I'm like so proud of myself for that. Obviously, there's all these accomplishments that you create that happen. But for me, I'm like, wow, I never gave up. And that's success. You know, you could have, to fail is to not get up when you do fail, you know, and failing is a part of success. All those things lead to it. So I feel like not giving up is like, that's the coolest part.
If you had to pick a song for your theme song of life, what would it be?
Oh my gosh. Well, my favorite song of all time is Don't Worry Baby by the Beach Boys.
I love that.
And I'm a worry wart.
So what do you worry about?
Everything.
You do?
Everything.
No.
I mean, yes. It's crazy.
But you don't seem like you worry. You're just an internal worrier.
Oh, yeah.
You don't speak your worries.
No. I just, in my brain, just think about every single thing that could ever happen.
Like what? Like natural disasters? Like dogs? Your career?
Yeah.
What?
Everything. Dogs, career, my mom, my favorite friends. I mean, just is everything.
Are you on constant replay with worry?
Yes.
Jin.
I know.
But your faith is so strong.
No, I know.
So you got to give your worry battle to with. The God.
I battle with that the most. That's why wine really helps me. But it's so funny, that song. William, I was engaged once.
Oh,
and
yes.
He asked me to marry him during that song. And so now I'm like,
don't worry, baby.
Yeah. So it kind of ruined my favorite song. So my goal is to now find a moment with that song that can change that memory.
Okay.
So I think that's what my, I got to figure that out.
What is love to you now at this point? After all the things, because you've had, you're so loving and you've had a lot of love and friendships, men. I mean, you're a loving person. What does love mean to you? You obviously have been engaged.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess love means being kind and caring. And I think, like I was saying, you're an empath. I think I am too. It's just, I'm always wanting to help. Wanting to help people. And I think sometimes that's gotten me in trouble because I find people that I want to help.
Save.
And yeah, save.
Really, let's be real. You want to save them.
Exactly.
Like, oh, I see you deep down underneath all these terrible, terrible traits.
I don't know why, but it must be something.
Because you see the best in everyone.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful thing. But
I'm going to just work on saving dogs now instead of men and save myself for a year or two.
Yeah.
But I do think love is like the first thing I can think of is kindness. I think that's love is so much, but being kind to one another and caring for people and animals.
Okay, so what's on your bucket list? Now that you are in a hit trio, breaking records, on tour with Carrie, your writing songs are in the top 10. I mean, you're doing the deal. So what's left?
Well, bucket list music-wise, it would be unbelievable to be nominated for a Grammy.
And win. Let's just win it.
Oh, totally. But I just think having that honor would be just unbelievable. And then non-music-wise, I really want to go to India. I've always wanted to go to India. I want to do a mission trip there and I just haven't been able to do it, but that's like been on my heart since I was a kid and I have no idea why. That, and I want to go see Machu Picchu, which you've done.
That's awesome.
So those are my bucket lists.
What's the greatest advice you've ever gotten?
My aunt basically saying don't give up, but she was like, listen, you're moving to Nashville, you want to be a solo singer. She was like, just a little advice for you. Take any opportunity that comes with music. She's like, don't not take it because it's not exactly what you want. She was like, if you get a red bike and you wanted a black bike, you can still ride a bike, you know? That's
really good advice.
And so I never forgot that because it was like, oh, maybe I moved here to be a solo singer, but maybe that wasn't my path. Maybe I was supposed to be in a trio or maybe it was a songwriter. Maybe it was working for a record label, like whatever it was in music. She just said, be open to it. Maybe not being exactly what you wanted, but be open to those opportunities. And I feel like I could have said no to so many because it wasn't
exactly perfect. What you had put together in your mind.
Yeah. And it was tough.
Yeah.
You know, and but we said, you and me said yes to everything. That
we did say yes to everything.
And it meant being here. All that stuff got both of us here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was probably the best advice I've gotten.
Okay, so I would like to keep talking to you, but I mean, it's time to wrap up. I always end with leave your light. So just all your journey that you've been on, everything you've gone through, obviously you've been inspiring us this whole hour, but what is something that you just want to share with people listening who maybe are lost right now or who maybe are trying to find their dream or who maybe feel like, I don't know, just they don't know what's next or they're just looking for inspiration. What is something that you want to share that you have just, that you think could help inspire people?
That it's okay. Like, it's okay to feel that way. Cause I feel like that's a struggle for me is I feel like I have to be perfect all the time. And that's just not reality. And that it's okay to feel that way. We all feel that way. And it, like, don't wallow in it, you know, just let yourself feel that way and trust yourself, trust your gut and just keep moving forward. But I feel like we beat ourselves up when things aren't okay. And when it's not perfect and when we're not, you know, feeling like things are exactly what we want. I just think to tell yourself it's okay. Like, we've all been there. And love yourself. Don't beat yourself up. Love yourself.
And that's hard to do sometimes.
It's really hard to do. Yeah.
Because we see all the flaws when, like, I look at you and I'm like, what could you not love about yourself?
It's same. I feel like, I feel like women, especially men too, but like, we really do look at ourselves so differently than how we really are. So I think it's a good thing to kind of practice loving yourself. And for me, I have to do it. It has to be like an intentional thing. Of course I love myself. I just
do. How do you intentionally? What do you do?
Like, intentionally, if you look in the mirror and you're like, ugh, I look fat or whatever. I'm like, wow, my legs, I can walk, I can run, I can, my legs are beautiful, they're strong, they get me places, instead of thinking that they're fat.
Yeah.
Like I intentionally change my feeling towards myself, and I have to, it has to be intentional, because my brain will just go there.
Yeah.
It'll just go to the negative about yourself. So every single day I just try to be intentional with loving myself. And like, would I tell that to my best friend? Like, no. Would I think that about my, would I think that about my mom or whatever? No. You just, but yourself, you're so hard on yourself. So kind of being intentional about that.
Why are we so hard on ourselves?
I have no idea. I don't know. I hope it gets better as we get older.
I hope so too.
I do actually do feel like it's for me gotten better. I feel like when I was younger, I just totally picked myself apart so much. And now I'm kind of like, you know what? Extra 5 pounds, like the extra 5 pounds that Brittany Aldean posted. Did you see those? That was my favorite. I'm like, those are extra 5 pounds are the moments you're having ice cream with your husband or having pizza or having wine. It's like, don't be so hard on yourself.
Yes.
And when you get older, as I've gotten older, I feel like it has gotten better. Like, it's okay. We're not perfect. Nobody's perfect.
I know.
Yeah.
Mine is, I'm always scared that people don't like me.
Really?
Uh-huh.
And everyone loves you.
But I'm always scared that, I don't know what it is, that people just don't like me. That there's like, they're like, oh, we don't really like Caroline. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Because everybody loves you. But and in my head. You're such a light, and you're like, what you're doing, you're spreading light. You even end it with that, you know, spreading light.
I think it's because I know my insecurities, and my insecurities feel ugly to me. So I feel like everyone must know them. And so like, I'm like, oh, everyone must know my insecurities. And so since they know them, they don't like me.
Yeah.
But really, everyone has insecurities.
We all do. It's crazy because I actually wrote a song yesterday with my band, and it's called Pretty Beautiful. And it's saying like all these things that are beautiful are not on the outside. It's like, you're pretty strong. You're pretty heart. You're everything that's beautiful is on the inside, and we look so much on the outside. And so it's crazy. We all pick ourselves apart, and what you're seeing is ugly. It's not, you're you. It's beautiful, you know, but mm-hmm. you're looking at yourself going, oh my gosh, that's ugly, but it's not, it's you.
I know. So we just gotta give ourselves grace. Don't be so hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah,
that's really love good yourself. Advice. Love ourselves.
And for me, being intentional with it, because it's like a practice every day. Like, be intentional with loving yourself.
Jen Wynn for president.
No. Of being a worrywart. Oh, God.
No, you'd be a great president. You'd save all the animals, the kids. We'd have world peace.
Oh, boy.
Because you can lay that hammer down, too. I'm telling you. It's good.
Move over, Trump.
You're coming in. Well, I love you, Jen. Thank you for coming on my podcast.
I'm so proud of you.
I'm so proud of you.
Thanks.
It's been
a fun journey.
It has been. This life journey with you has been great.
It has been.
Okay, I love you. Bye.